Record better audio anywhere with Motive digital microphones from Shure. Easy-to-use options like the MV88 plug directly into your phone or computer and include a free app. Create studio-quality sound for podcasts, music, and videos. Visit Shure.com to learn more.
Blog Talk Radio.
You just don't know what you do to me.
Bad.
Give me all the chicken heads from Pasadena to Medina. Bet big, get in between your dentists. Keep the prognosis, doses, blends and bends like Twizzlers. Biggest victim to hurt, what's under that skirt? Who filling them with octane? Got them gassed up, about to get blasted up, son. The last one was the mother, brother, miss him. I seen it when he kissed him at the wake. Made his body shake. The high guy is 8-bit. The eyes smoke. Rap terror, four chrome and terror.
Like
five by the rivers, the fifth is conspicuous. Bad boy 6 to 95, ridiculous.
Right.
My rap lines is like landmines. One step, kaboom, black suit filled the room. So women make it.
You are listening to the 30 Plus WTF show. The Fabica.
Right.
In the middle of the day.
Good evening. This is Malika, Brittany, Lonnie, and Bobby, and we are the 30 Plus WTF show where we talk about what is necessary. Hey, Brittany.
Hey, lady. How you doing?
Amazing, amazing. Hey, Lonnie.
Well, hello there, ladies.
Hello, Lonnie.
How is everyone?
Wonderful. How are you?
Phenomenal.
As always, phenomenal.
Good, good. Mr. Bobby Burns is running a tad bit late, but we're going to keep the show running here. Brittany, what you got for us before we bring our awesome guest on tonight?
My question today is about what do you want? Is there something that you wanted to pursue that you felt you haven't had time for or the money for or whatever for, but you still want to do it and learn about it, whatever. Is there something?
Lonnie, feel free.
I love how you throw me into the mix. I don't know. I wanna fish every freshwater spot in the entire world. That's
you
what
wanna
I want.
What?
I want to fish. Go fishing in every single freshwater spot.
Nice. Oh, I like it.
And I haven't had the money or the time, but I'm going to get it.
Okay. I like it.
Mr. Bobby Burns just joined us. Hey, Bobby.
I'm sorry, I had
Mr.
it on mute. How y'all doing?
Good. How you doing?
Hello, hello.
All right. All right.
I
Brittany,
missed Brittany's
question.
Question.
Yes, yes. And you know it's always
there,
a good one.
Right. Is there something that you wanted to pursue that you felt like you didn't have time for or the money or whatever? And what is it?
I feel like that's the story of my life and most people's lives.
Sure. Okay, pick one.
Just the business, probably. You know, I'm one of those guys where it's just a ton of ideas, not enough money, a lot of time and not enough money. So just I would pick just one of the many business ideas I've had through the years and just wish I had the capital to get it off the ground.
Okay.
They're all just blurring
like
through my mind. I wish I could remember. I've sold it. I've sold women's shoes. I've sold baseball caps. I've sold dreams. I've sold it all. And so one of those many things, I wish I had the capital to really push it further.
Okay.
That's a good one. My thing is I always wanted to open up adoption agencies around the country and just take care of those children without a family. And I used to volunteer for the Cradle Adoption Agency, but, you know, like life kind of gets in the way. You know, you don't have the time to really invest like you really, really want to.
Nice.
But That was something I really, really wanted to pursue.
I like it.
Somebody's got some background noise going on. So let's,
I don't think that's
let's
me.
Get that quiet it down before we bring our guest on.
Yes, ma'am. It might be me.
Okay. All right. And Miss Brittany, a response to your own
ma'am.
Question.
Yeah, you know what? I've always wanted to learn a couple languages, more than English, because I always say I barely speak English. But I wanted to learn a couple languages. I mean, I studied Spanish in school, but I think I want to do, like, Spanish, maybe some Japanese, some Hebrew. I just think languages are very interesting, and they sound so pretty. I love accents and stuff like that. So that's one thing that I've really thought about recently pursuing. Why not? Always keep learning. Keep your mind stimulated. I'd love to learn some more languages.
Yes, keep learning, keep growing, most definitely. Well, everybody has
for
some
sure.
pretty interesting questions. Got to be sure to ask our guest that question, though. I mean, he's pursuing a lot and definitely achieving a lot. We want to respect his time. There's so much information I want to get from him today, so we're going to get the show moving here. It's wow. Dino Robinson, he is someone I truly have a great deal of respect for. He has started a movement that is so important to the Black community, and I wanted to be sure that our listeners understand and know how valuable Shorefront Legacy is in documenting prominent Black leaders on the shore and keeping our stories alive for generations. So I want all our listeners to look up Shorefront Legacy. That is something you definitely want to follow and keep tabs on, because we all understand that our history isn't often told in completion or how it truly was, and there are many Black American leaders who are living literally right next door to you who are doing amazing work, and their story is never told, never recognized, and is just missed. The next generation will never learn of these amazing people who live right there in your community. And Dino Robinson, I mean, along with his community, founded the Shorefront Legacy Center, and he also holds the prestigious position as co-chair of the Evanston Art Council, and he's the production manager at Northwestern University. So the man is making things happen on the North Shore, and we appreciate and respect his vision and his work. So please welcome to the show Mr. Dino Robinson. Welcome, Dino. Welcome.
Welcome. Am I here?
Hey.
Yes, you're here,
Dino.
Yes. You're here.
Brittany, Bobby, Lonnie.
Hello.
What's happening?
How's everyone?
Great. How you doing?
Amazing.
I'm a bit humbled. I mean, that wonderful introduction. I'm like, wow, I did all that.
And, you know, I want to jump in for 1 second because I want to say something to you personally and publicly. No one has fought harder than you to retain this legacy and make this legacy something that can be seen by millions and millions of people. And I may not have told you this in our own little meetings, but I'm proud of you. You've done an amazing job. The importance of the story is a lot bigger than people will ever understand, and I thank you for working almost your whole entire life to keep telling it.
Oh, thank you, Lonnie.
Can you tell us how you got started with the Shorefront Legacy, or what was your impetus in doing it? Can you tell us how that happened?
Sure, I could do that. Actually, it kind of goes back when I was a young kid. What then led to the idea of having a repository in the North Shore. My first influence, of course, has been family. And I remember one time I was visiting my grandmother in South Carolina. I was 13 years old. And, you know, during the August month, you know, weeks before school was about to start, South Carolina was 102 degrees outside, 104 degrees inside. My grandmother didn't believe in air conditioning, so we had a hot fan blowing on me. And I was sitting in the living room, and my grandmother was a custodial of 14 photo albums from different family members, things that she put together. And it turned out it was like a family history. I remember they're sitting there as 13 years old looking through it and just flipping the pages. You know, 13-year-old mind, I'm thinking, okay, old pictures of a bunch of dead old people. I have no idea who it is. And my grandmother saw what I was doing, and so she sat down next to me and flipped back to the very first page of this photo album I was looking at and said, this is your great, great, great grandfather, and this is what he did.
Mm.
I was transfixed from that point on. We went through all the photo albums talking about family and land and the trials and the triumphs and seeing that, wow, I'm not taught this in my school. I'm taught that Christopher Columbus discovered America, we were once slaves, and Dr. King freed us. That's it in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And seeing this big history of my own family, I'm like, well, then everybody's family should have the same history. So that was my first touch. And my second and third touch was freshman year of high school. My history teacher saw what I was doing, put me in history honors. College, I took a class on what was called, the title of the class was called Ancient Christianity in Africa. And the teacher said, that's just my cover title. What I'm going to teach you to do is how to look up firsthand resources in discovering your own history. Then the third touch was a local person who ran a newspaper who in the social atmosphere just said, you know, it would be great if you write an article about the black history in Evanston. And I figured that, well, with a city like Evanston, you know, obviously something should exist. And I trucked on over to the library and found there was not much there. And I went over to the Evanston History Center and there were, you know, what I was introduced to or showed there was three file folders labeled colored. And I just kind of said, well, you know, we got to do something about this. I got to do something about this. And I started asking a lot of questions around the community. Now, there are other organizations trying to do something like this. You know, there are sometimes self-interest or older groups that were doing some things, and I asked if I can get involved with it. And that didn't get anywhere, but my parents always taught me, if you think you see me, you need to see something done, then just go ahead and do it. And that's kind of how it started. I just started researching, reading, going over to the Evanston History Center every Saturday, reading through all the old newspapers just to get used to names, going to the Newberry Library and going through census data, talking to residents in the community. And some of these early residents that I was talking to became the growth of our first Shorefront's first board members. And we started putting up little exhibits here and there and asking more questions. And we had an idea to start a magazine or a newsletter of some sort. And my only rule was I don't want it to be called like the African-American Heritage Center and teaching university. I just wanted something short, to the point, that really emulates that we are talking about American history. And Shorefront evolved from that concept, and we stuck with it.
Wow.
So that's the story.
Many of our listeners are you know, over 30, and our elders that we grew up with, you know, and spent so much precious time with, you know, I'm afraid a lot of us didn't really sit down and get those stories when we had the opportunity because, you know, they're starting to really, you know, they're passing away now. So our legacies, our stories are starting to get lost. What can you advise our listeners on how to document their own family legacies, their own family stories? Because I regret, you know, that I didn't get an opportunity to really sit down and talk to some of my favorite relatives that have passed on. Mm-hmm. I got some information here and there, but gosh, after they passed and questions started popping up, I was like, God, I wish, you know, I'll never get the answer. I'll never get the answer.
Yeah.
It's gone. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I think that's something as we grow older, we start realizing our mortality, and it's like a natural progression. We listen to a lot of things when we're teenagers, you know, when our parents are sitting around the table and talking about things and we're eavesdropping, you know, and trying not to say anything but take it all in. Sometimes we're not really paying attention, but we're taking that stuff in. I think it's important, mm-hmm. if you can, when things pop up, to write things down, like in a personal journal. I remember this conversation with my mother or father or grandmother about XYZ. Just write it down somewhere and keep that organized. Another thing, especially today with today's technology, we all have smartphones for the most part, or some type of portable recording device, you know, such as this podcast. It would be a great opportunity to just call up your family member and say, hey, you know, can I just spend some time talking to you about what was life like growing up in your time period? And just keep it a casual conversation. Family reunions, you know, who is the family historian? And a lot of times it's someone who's retired. And how does that retired person, or if that family member, engage a younger generation? Who are they identifying as the next history keeper of that family? And start handing things over while you're still living, you know, and have your memories intact so that we can do, so it can perpetuate instead of being lost in a collection of photo albums with no names and nobody knows who it is. And then because nobody knows who it is, we have a tendency to just discard it after a while. That's something we just cannot do.
Right. That's super important. I feel like you're saying that, especially names of people, because I know I have photo albums. I have no idea who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
I know they must be related because they're in a photo album in my house that my mom had. And I was just like, you know, and it's just, like you're saying, super important. But I feel like especially on my father's side, I don't know if this is true in every black family, but some families feel like we've made it from that and they don't want to discuss it sometimes. And I feel like what you're saying is to make it a casual conversation about stories takes some of the pressure off, because a lot of their history is very traumatizing.
Right.
And
right, definitely.
They don't want to discuss it, because I know there were times I was, you know, I tried to get stories, names, facts, dates from my family, and they would, you know, my grandmother, who lived, bless her heart, to be 95 years old, she'd be like, oh, you know, it was the South, you know, it was the 30s,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying, the 20s, and they didn't want to really talk about it. But then, what I thought was very interesting, some people came through Evanston, and some white people came through Evanston, and she talked to them about it, which I didn't understand at all, but okay. But I'm just saying that.
That's something I come across a lot, too. It's like, really?
Right.
Well, you know, I want to stick my head in here for a minute. You know, what you're talking about is the generational trauma that I kind of scream about everywhere. People think I'm actually kind of, you know, loose in the head because I keep saying it. But also, I think that we didn't realize the forward thinking and foresight of our forefathers who brought people here from Carolina and Mississippi, wherever they came from. And I just want to turn this in a little different way, Dino, because I got severe questions in my head. You know, that treasure that they saw in Evanston and around this, you know, this lake and the things, we seem to be losing, you know, in a real ugly way, the home ownership, you know, the assets that these people fought and, you know, died and wiped butts for. And, you know, it just kind of bothers me that we're losing the assets in such a rapid pace. My question to you would be, as a historian, you know, you've seen what worked. You've seen what kept us together and tight. What would you say to the today's Evanston African-American family who is struggling to hold on to their home, and how important that asset is, and what could they do to keep it?
So that is a complex question. I mean, I love the question, but it is complex. Just historically, I mean, if you think, you know, and we're going to keep with Evanston as the model community to focus us on. At one point, Evanston's black community had the largest percentage of, you know, long-term home ownership and pride. And part of that was due to its time period, you know, with segregated policies, redlining. So we were forced in a small pocket, regardless of our economic status, to engage as a community and build as a community and be resourceful as a community. I think what one of our biggest downfall was buying into this American dream when open housing started loosening up, equal rights, civil rights, all the fruits of the civil rights movement, and this whole dream of full integration in this community, that, you know, things would just prosper for everyone. But what ended up happening is that those who were able to move away and pursue that dream took with them their resources, and businesses had moved. The economy has changed. No more small mom-and-pop shops, but more or less more franchise and big corporations. You had kids going away to school and then coming back wanting to live here and finding that the cost of living has gone tremendously up. Housing costs have gone up, but the salaries were not going up with it. So you have families who have the potential to be upward mobile, move to different communities that you can buy a McMansion for the same price as buying a small little ranch here in Evanston.
Yeah.
So you have all these different dynamics happening that tore this up. But at the same time, too, so there's a tendency to buy into commercial ideas, like we have to have that big house, we have to drive that expensive car, we have to work for someone. Gone are the days of teaching our kids to, you know, get your education, start your business, patent your own ideas, invest your money locally, partner with other neighbors in your community to do something positive. Sometimes we tend to look at, how am I going to prop myself up and make myself big on the backs of everybody else?
Everybody else.
So it gets really complex and really dynamic. And it's frustrating at times, too. I mean, I've heard you speak many times, Lottie and Bobby, and just around what concerns us and what's happening in Evanston. And it's like that in a lot of communities across the United States. It's frustrating a bit, and one part of it that I think that I try and do with Short Point is show that we have a long history here, and instead of using our historical collective memory as a traveling timeline, just remembering our history according to our life and our impact in our life, I'm trying to take Short Point back and our history back to its beginning in this community and build that infrastructure of our historical narrative that
wow.
we have been here. We've been part of this community. We helped build this community. Here are all the clubs and organizations we started. Here are the churches we started.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the businesses that we've done. Here are the kids that were going to foster school, a segregated school, and the norm was you are going to college. The norm was you are going to start a business. The norm was you're going to own your property and not ask for a handout. Somehow we lost our way with that. You know, and I say that, as a general statement. I remember when I was graduating college, you know, I remember my parents saying, you know, when you graduate, go get this job at this corporation. It was never okay, you're graduating. Son, you have skills and talent. Start your own business.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole different mindset.
Well, right. I want to thank you for that answer because that answer was powerful, brother, because what you're saying is use the foundational model we have and rebuild. I love that.
Right. Yeah,
and one thing
that,
I wanted to say, too, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Brittany.
Oh, I'm good.
Okay.
Go.
No, one thing I just wanted to say is, I was watching a documentary on what's happening in some of the neighborhoods in San Francisco. And so when Dino said this is something that's happening all over, it really is. And what's troubling is that some communities have already lost that battle. You know, there's Chicago neighborhoods that have lost that battle as far as, you know, trying to figure out what do you do with high growth communities, which Evanston is a high growth community. It was always going to get to this point. You know, the university, I believe, and Dino could correct me if I'm wrong, but was in Evanston before the town itself was even a town. I'm pretty sure. I think the Northwestern was here and the students were here. And so, you know, obviously educational institutions are generally the staples in community and the anchors of community. And so I think it was always a high growth community. And so we were always going to get to this point where there was a high cost of living because we're going to continue to see growth, continue to see people moving here, trying to move closer to the water, to the university. And so we were always going to get to this point in a way. And knowing that some communities have already lost this fight, have lost their middle class, have lost their poor, people who can't afford to stay on pace with that growth. I think the question for me is, you know, what do we do about it now that, you know, there is some time right now where we can, in a way, make a stand? And my question to Dino is, I'd love for the audience to know, you know, what can we do to preserve Shorefront? You know, so while Shorefront is trying to preserve the history of this community, you know, in some respects, we need to also support and preserve Shorefront.
Without
you know what
doubt.
I mean?
Without
and
doubt.
I would love for him to speak about some of the barriers that Shorefront has faced and some of the difficulties, and just to kind of lay it out, what do we need to do collectively to make sure that we always have a Shorefront?
Okay, yeah. I love this question. Don't want to turn it into a marketing pitch. Give. But
listen, we don't, boy.
The part that I find interesting, and I look at what communities do, there are some questions I'll get or some comments I'll get from residents that, yeah, Shorefront is important. We need to keep it here. How can I support? And what I think you should do is have this company sponsor you and blah, blah, blah. And I always say, okay, how? When we go out and look for long-term support, we have to look within our community first, because Shorefront writes for grants. We apply for grants, and they're very hard to get, especially in the field that we're in. We're in humanities, and humanities is like right smack dab in the middle of arts and social services.
Wow.
So there's lots of money for social services, lots of money for arts, because people get those two things. Social services, you're measuring the impact of an impacted clientele.
Mm-hmm.
You see the percentages go up and down. How many clients did you serve? Blah, blah, blah. What did you solve? How many people are healthy? How many people are getting school books? Yeah, the arts. How many performances you put on? We can see the performances. We can see the visual artwork. We can see the music that's being produced. We can see the kids singing and dancing. Humanities is like a library. We are a resource for both where the social services and the arts utilize to continue their work. So our impact is very hard to measure. We have to try and find creative ways of measuring other than how many people have come down to do research. I try and measure how many people by just sheer chance or in their social surroundings mention something they learned at Shorefront, but not associated with Shorefront. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there was a black YMCA. Now, they might not – they think that they learned that at Shorefront, but that doesn't get verbalized publicly. Here's what I learned at Shorefront. I learned that there was a black YMCA. That doesn't
mm-hmm.
happen. So it's very hard to get that impact. So when people are giving, they don't necessarily see what they're giving to until they come to Shorefront and they see that we have shelves upon shelves with 180 linear feet of archival material dating back, you know, over 100 years. We have, you know, over 1,500 photographs and negatives that depict the black communities in the North Shore. We have 1,200 obituary programs that talk about family who passed away, and there's a little bio of them in there. We have 500 non-circulating books that are on or by or about the black experience. And people come down and do research on this and take these takeaways with them and produce something. So when we write grants and we enumerate all this stuff, still one of the one questions they ask is, how is your community supporting? And they don't mean by, you know, giving archive or coming by. What are they giving
mm-hmm.
financially? And
right.
if I say, well, the community is supporting us and we annually raise $5,000 from the community, well, the only grant I can write to up to is $5,000.
Gotcha.
Mm.
However, take an example of the Holocaust Museum in Skokie.
Mm-hmm.
The entire community got behind that, and families were donating on a monthly and yearly basis to that idea. Businesses were putting money into it, resources, thought behind it. So when it was time for them to write grants and go to their city officials, their state officials, and the federal government, they can say, we raised $7 million. Can you match the $7 million?
Mm-hmm.
Now they have a facility that they built with outdoor water garden and memorial garden programs, all these different things. They're buying land, and guarantee you that area is going to keep growing. So what we have to do as a community, and our stats have, I mean, we're about, we make up 17% of the community in Evanston. Across the North Shore, we have about maybe 20,000 black individuals living just along the North Shore, Evanston, the Lake Forest. Imagine if every person donated $1 a month.
Mm-hmm.
How fast that money can grow.
Grow.
Right.
And then after a couple of years, go ahead.
No, I'm going to, you know, because you just hit me in the head with all my beliefs in one sentence. what I really believe, one of the problems in the African-American community is it's how we organize, you know, and I say this over and over and over again. You know, just hearing you say that, I'm going to say to you that I am willing, as of today, to find a way to talk to every single African-American on this North Shore and try to get that thing done for a dollar a month. It's worth it. It's smart. It teaches us a type of unity that can be used in all kind of things. And and really, what makes me feel really bad is I've watched you, Dino. I mean, we're talking 10, 15 years I've watched you pretty much drag this wagon down the street pretty much by yourself tied to your dreads. And literally, I've watched it. And what bothers me is that here I sit, and you know, I consider myself a certain amount of conscious, and I never had that picture that you just painted for me in my mind.
Yeah.
And it's a powerful thing, and it needs to be done like tomorrow.
Right.
And I'll say to you right now, you know, this isn't even a question, but I'm willing to do whatever work you need to do to get the word out and to get people there to do that. And you know, then just on a little side thing, these archives and this wonderful information you have. Now, I know you also put out a paper, right? Am I correct? Shorefront.
Well, we have we used to do Shorefront Journal as a quarterly magazine.
Right.
It's now online, and I think you've responded to a couple posts that we put on there.
Yes, I have.
We collect those at the end of the year and make a printed publication, which you can purchase. If you go to our website, you can purchase and get it delivered directly to your home.
Mm-hmm.
This online version of it has been wonderful. When we did the printed version years ago, we did 35 issues all together over the course of the years that we were doing it. We only had a reach of however many we printed. There's usually about 300 copies that we print. Since we went online, our average visit per month is 750 visits.
Whoa.
That is spectacular.
That's a big number.
Not only that, but people are reading it and engaging with that. So they'll read the article, and the forums are open. People will add their bit of knowledge to that, or, oh, yeah, I remember that incident. This is what happened, and this is how I was involved. And they keep adding to that, and that is what's beautiful about the journal. And so much that the Illinois Association of Museums recognized us with an award of excellence for that online journal and our printed volume. Because of how we engage the community and collect, you know, living history and telling a bit about the past.
That's
what's also cool is that we're able to talk about things that people just generally don't know, even within our own community. We think we know our history. We only know, like, surface stuff about our history. Our history is so deep and so complex that I could talk about a subject and people are like, really? That happened here? And that's just amazing to get those responses.
Were you a part of those pictures that were posted, like, on street? Or was that just the Evanston Historical Society? I remember walking down the street in Evanston, and there were pictures of historically black families and communities. I look up one day, and they had a picture of, like, the judo studio in Evanston. And
that was in celebration. Yeah, that was in celebration of the Emerson Street YMCA. Those photographs did come from our archives, and me as a graphic designer, I designed those. But it was a program that started by the Gaul YMCA in remembrance of the Emerson Street branch YMCA. And so, since the lot was still vacant, we did this commemorative honoring of the plot where the YMCA stood. And the signs were erected around the block. Not only that one, I think it was just Emerson Street Y and also the Henry Butler Building.
Okay. Yeah, I remember.
It was very interesting to look up and see my dad in a picture. Like, you know how they're saying?
Oh.
Like, they don't talk about it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, there's my dad. Okay.
Yeah.
So very interesting.
You know,
go ahead.
We need to kind of, you know, I want to hear more about the legacy of this town and what it took to build this thing. Could you give a little? I mean, I know it's a complicated thing, but
yeah.
I don't think a lot of people understand. You know,
I know, right?
I talk to Gloria Johnson sometimes, and she tells me about the women who, you know,
mm-hmm.
literally you can watch the buses of women going to clean houses and the
right
the rear ends of the richer. People on the other end just to buy their house to come home every day. I think that is one of the most powerful
mm-hmm.
stories ever because
mm-hmm.
I remember my own grandmother doing it, and it just, you know, just that's a powerful story. Could you touch on it and just talk a little bit about what?
Yeah, let me touch on some really early stuff here. Just I want to say, you know, clarify too that, I mean, thank you for that mention that, you know, like you like the graphic picture you painted of me pulling a wagon down the street with my red lights. I think it's kind of funny.
Right.
I have to do that one day at a parade.
That is
right.
a visual.
Right.
That's a
right.
real
right.
visual.
But you know, we have a board of 7 dedicated, hardworking board members that are out on the pavement pounding away and getting history and donating their professional services to make sure Front happen. We have 7 board of advisors who we can call at any time and get advice on legal aspects, spiritual assets, educational and scholarly assets. Then we have an honorary board where we consult with when we need to know how do we engage the community better, who do we need to talk to, who do we need to gain respect from, what are we doing right, what are we doing wrong. That's actually my most important question I always ask, what are we doing right, what are we doing wrong. But I wanted to say that because that they're part of this big picture. And but this early history in Evanston and that of the North Shore is quite remarkable in a way that here is an area, and that's why we call ourselves Shorefront, because we're covering this territory here along the lakefront, families, you know, some escaping slavery and moving north to find a better life. Just like anybody else would want to do so. Why did you move to Evanston and the North Shore? For better homes, better
mm-hmm.
education, and job opportunities, and the chance to live that American dream. So
mm-hmm.
we had people who escaped, you know, from slavery north to Evanston and the North Shore. Those who escaped earlier went up to Canada and came back to Evanston and the North Shore. Evanston and the North Shore was a direct destination, not Chicago first and then North Shore, directly to Evanston. Or Glencoe,
wow.
or Lake Forest. So these 3 communities that we really focus on, especially with like early history in Lake Forest, the oldest black church on the North Shore was established in Lake Forest. And that was in 1860.
Oh, wow.
Then you had Evanston's 2 churches, Ebenezer and Second Baptist in 1882. Then St. Paul up in Glencoe, and then Mount Zion here in Evanston. So those are like the older churches before the turn of the century. And you had a growing black population in Evanston and Glencoe and Lake Forest, you know, starting in Evanston with 2 in 1850s to nearly 730 by 1900, and then by close to 5,000 by 1930. So it was a rapidly growing community, and that's just Evanston. Lake Forest was growing. Glencoe was also growing as well, and both had established black communities of people running businesses and starting churches and building a community where they were. There were several like restaurants up in Lake Forest owned by the Matthews family, ice cream parlor, grocery store. They trained horses at country clubs. They had a livery service, a livery business, 3 of them up there. Glencoe
wow.
had, you know, a bicycle shop and some other businesses there and the church there and the community that was growing. And then Wilmette had at the turn of the century, had a grocery store right off of, I think, Wilmette Avenue that's now close, like 2 or 3 blocks away from the Wilmette Public Library. And the house is still there. It looks pretty much exactly the same other than siding that is new.
Mm-hmm.
but the Smith family that owned that at the turn of the century have descendants that live here in Evanston today. The Matthews family up in Lake Forest that had the ice cream parlor have descendants that live here in Evanston today.
I went to school with them.
So it's really kind of cool to see that kind of history established in Evanston and off the radar of the greater historical dialogue. And so when people hear about these things, they always say, wow, I didn't know this happened. I didn't know that we had these things happening in Evanston and the North Shore. I didn't know that these people were well connected with influential people that we only read about in history books. And they were working with, partnering with, and engaged with in a real way. You had, let's say, like turn of the century, you had the Julia Gaston Club, who was part of the Magic Seven Clubs. The other six clubs were in Chicago that basically began the, I might get the name slightly wrong, but it was like the Federated Colored Women's Club of the Federated Organization of Women's Black Women's Clubs. And the organizing clubs were called the Magic Seven, and one of them was the Julia Gaston Club. And there were two other clubs in Chicago that were, the president at that time were Evanston women. So we had movers and shakers here. It was not by accident that Edwin B. Jordan Jr. moved to Evanston. He started grad school in journalism at Northwestern, but didn't stay there long because he got a job at the Chicago Defender as sports editor, and then was the managing editor of the Chicago Bee. But he eventually ran for alderman of the 5th Ward and held that seat for 17 years when he was elected, reelected in 1931 and held that seat until about 1947. And having the honor to have his children, his oldest child, Rose Jourdain, being one of our founding board members of Shorefront, was awe-inspiring to say the least. And because of the work that we did and do, the family donated their father's, Edwin B. Jourdain Jr.'s, archives to Shorefront that go back over 100 years. And this is a fantastic archive of handwritten speeches, not only from him, but also his father, who was Edwin Jourdain Sr., who was very good friends with W.B. Du Bois, and he was one of the 22 members of the Niagara Movement, which led to the founding of the NAACP. So you have families like that with heavily involved in social and civic engagement that has been the history of the black community in Evanston and that of the North Shore. So it's by no accident that when things happen that we quickly mobilize, engage in dialogue and protest and write articles and debate over these things. It's because it's in our blood to do so.
Oh, wow. Can you talk a little bit about Enhance?
Wait, say that one more time.
Can you talk a little bit about Enhance Evanston, or is it Enhance Literacy in Evanston?
I'm not quite sure I'm following that one.
Oh, okay.
I got a really quick statement.
Oh, go ahead with your question.
First of all, I want you to know that you're validating my entire life. I knew I was fighting about something, and just listening to you, you validated why I get up every morning kind of angry. And my own family has been here, close to 100 years also, and it's just it's amazing, when I hear the stories. I heard a lot of stories while sitting at the knee of Bill Logan Sr., and he just would. He just told me about, the struggles, and I just remember them. And then to hear you say these things about these, this seven group of clubs that were movers and shakers. I saw a thing from Our Friends Disappear about Du Bois coming on the train to the Masonic Temple.
Right.
And, just things like that, which were really powerful. And I want to, I'm always a troublemaker, so I'm just going to ask you like this. These monumental places like Masonic Temple, the old community church, community hospital. Even Fleetwood Jourdain, Family Focus. And I love Family Focus and I love the people because I worked there for 17 years. But These are monuments that should be owned and operated by the people who bled for them. Now, I'm going to open this up like this. How do we get ourselves in a position? I think one of the ways I've already answered today is we first start supporting things like you're doing, and the story gets told, and then we build on that story. But one of the things that I'm noticing, and I'm part street, so I watched as the prison pipeline and the crack walked through Evanston, and I watched homes, that were helped designed by Frank Lloyd Wright be sold for $25,000, $60,000, being literally taking them from the African-American people who were at the time probably ill, but we just didn't have we don't have the network. Do you understand? When you start talking about families and that type of strength, and it's been around for 100 years, that tells me that strength lives on this North Shore. By using those stories that you tell, how do we focus that power? Because we got to get...
Actually, that's key. That's key, actually, is focus. I think, and this is part of, my observation, part opinion. Sometimes we have short-term plans, and we forget about the long-term plans. I think it's very important that we refocus long-term plans and long-term planning. Do we want do we want the family-focused building? Let's say collectively that answer is yes. So what do we do to start positioning ourselves to be in that position to take over that building? Do we start pooling money together and getting the thought process together and educate that, so when the opportunity comes that, hey, this building's for sale, we could jump on it right away? I think it's very important to get involved in what the city's long-term planning is for planning and development. Learn what developers are talking about, because usually when you see groundbreaking somewhere in a big project, that conversation started 10 years prior. And it's just talk at the time, but it was still planning and putting together proposals and talking to people over and over and over again. And so when that button was pressed by the city, okay, we're going to break ground, you already have three developers that were already vying to get that business.
They already have the plan set up usually. You know what I mean?
Already set up.
Designed.
So by the time and so if it's something that's important to us, by the time we react to it, it's been too late.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and I feel like Lonnie, you're saying, you need to be in the room when the discussion starts. And I think that's
important. And we have to be very focused. So what are what I do with short form with our board is, our board constantly says, let's do three things and do it well. What are the three things we're going to focus on? Yeah, there's a laundry list of things that need to be done. But with an organization like ours, and, by the way, we are all volunteer. There is no paid staff at Shorefront. We've been doing this out of desperation that we know this is needed for the community. We want it to be long-term. We want it to grow beyond us. We want to have a director that we could pay. We have a savvy enough director that says, hey, I can come in. I could generate the revenues. I could write the grant to fund my position. I'd be more than happy to say, here, take it, run with it. We've had two directors beforehand, Debbie Chesmaby, who was our first director, and she did it as a volunteer. And our second director was Joy Anissa Russell, who started out as a volunteer. Then she was doing some great stuff, and like, hey, we could pay you at least $25 a month maybe. And, she took that, and then it grew because she started getting these grants in, and we were able to pay her accordingly, and she gave us 5 years of her valuable services. Debbie gave us 4 years of her valuable services, and also started programming there. And that became the three things that we always do: so exhibit, the journal, and lectures. And we just keep doing those at a consistent pace. So if we start thinking about a long-term plan and stick on what are the things we're going to focus on, we want to get a school in the Fifth Ward. We want to get buildings in this area. We want to establish a consistent learning environment for our community, or business empowerment incubator for our community. I mean, we can literally start another Harlem Renaissance right here in Evanston.
Let's do it, Dino.
And what's important is it's going to take people who are younger than us. I mean, I'm pushing 50, believe it or not, And I've been doing this since I was 28. That's a long time. And I would love to see somebody fresh out of college say, hey, this is a cool idea. What would it take to be a director? Say, you want to start tomorrow?
Yeah, Bobby
that's all
I'm going to
say. Let me show you how to do it right now. Come on in.
I just want to say something. You know, I don't know if Dina would agree, but I feel like something like Shorefront should never have to worry about money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I don't know if it was discussed, but my call dropped. I don't know if the real estate investment trust was discussed, but I truly believe that is the best for-profit model for what we're trying to do. And we can go into that, you know, on some of the other shows, but I think if we can connect Shorefront to an entity that has, you know, for-profit activity, and to a entity that is sustainable, that can kick back, you know, some of its profits or some of its wealth into supporting Shorefront and supporting Shorefront's needs, whether that's to pay a director or whatever the needs may be. I certainly think that is what we need to do, and also it supports, as Dino mentioned, putting back other institutions and cultural things that we had in the community pre-integration. And you know, I'm not sure if you know how everybody feels about that, but I would love to see, you know, a movement start in support of a real estate investment trust. And, you know, because this, and especially to shore up Shorefront, and I say that because, you know, we lack cultural competency, especially our young. I think Dino touched on a little bit before, as in we think we know our history, but we really don't. And, you know, I was reading something the other day that said that, you know, understanding who you are, your cultural identity should be the first education for a young person, and is the most important education for an individual, period, because it allows you to see your place in the world. And so if we as a people cannot see Shorefront as a valuable entity, nobody else will. And I can say that, you know, I can speak for myself and say this black man on this phone truly, truly supports what Shorefront is doing, what Dino has done. I see the value in it in my life. Every time that I hear Dino speak and present, I get something new from it. I get inspiration from it, knowing that people like me did wonderful things and were successful in business, especially as an entrepreneur, is what I identify with, seeing how other entrepreneurs in this area, again, who looked like me were successful. I get motivation from that. I get inspiration from it. And it's something that I hope that my son, who's 3 years old now, draws from that and is able to get the same inspiration from. And so I'd like to kick that to the group, but also to all the listeners. You know, we all know what needs to be, you know, we all know what the issues are. We know what the barriers are. We know that it's just as much as financial as it is anything. You know, I've been reading a lot about Marcus Garvey, and, you know, he really felt like economic development was and economic independence was really what folks needed in order to create their own path. And, you know, we need to get back to that. And I see the activists in the street, and it's wonderful, it's needed, it's necessary. But as much as people, you know, talk about some of the hip-hop artists, I think it's a reason why they're always talking about money, you know. And if we can meld those two ideas, you know, this pursuit of money and economic independency with that spirit of the activists in the street talking about the struggle and our history, we would really be on to something. And I think when we leave out one or the other is when we start to just stagnate and not have much movement. So I just wanted to kick that back to the group and see what everybody thought about that.
That whole idea, I mean, we've talked about it before. Lonnie and I talked about money and how money and finance creates options, but it also is one of the ways to obtain power. And to be powerful in our own neighborhood is so important, because I heard somebody say there's two ways to obtain power, and it's either by force or finance. So it's either take it or buy it. And that's the whole thing, to take the power back to our own neighborhoods, tell our own stories. I think that's why you talk about having a school in our in the Fifth Ward, because we need to tell our own stories and inform our own families about where we come from, where we've been, what we've done, which leads me to my thing about the Fifth Ward celebration that's going to be going on soon. Do you all want to talk about that, the Fifth Ward Festival?
I'm going to give a
I'm
going to give a real quick shout out for that, because it really sets what Dino is doing. One of the things and reason why this Fifth Ward Festival came up is because the news situation, the media situation about the Fifth Ward was like, ever since black community was the little violent little brother in the, you know, in the town. And I wanted people to understand, just people who love here, who live here, who work here, who die here, who do really wonderful things throughout their lives, and they don't get the recognition that five little knuckleheads got over the last 17 years, or maybe 15 years, since it really got hot. And we wanted to make people come to the Fifth Ward, because always it's the Custer Street Fair, it's the beach, it's everything. Well, I hate to tell y'all something, we have a really pretty side of Evanston that has its own cultural identity. It has its own parks and people and life and trees and birds. And you need to come to our community and see us. So that's what the Fifth Ward Festival is on the 27th. But, you know, that's the 27th, that's Saturday from 12 to 8. I'm giving you a shameless plug from 12 to 8 at Twiggs Park. But I want to, you know, I want to pull Dino back in here on another, just another small thing, because I think you said a word in this, in your conversation, that was really powerful to me, and it was renaissance. And I think that if we use that model of that renaissance, and create it, and I really truly believe it could be created in Evanston, because every single factor that you need to create it exists here. I guess I would ask you, how do we make a bigger movement? Okay, we're going to support Shorefront. We're going to push our people to put their money behind this thing. How do we make a bigger movement? And I'll leave that on you, Dino.
I think, you know, making that movement, here's a good example. And I don't know if you know how many people, you probably are seeing this too, but for the last 20 years or so, there has been a movement going on countrywide. We've all been having our isolated fights in every community about injustices, inequity, and things. But all of a sudden, one phrase tied it all together and made it a big, massive movement, and that's Black Lives Matter. That one phrase, a light bulb went in my head and said, wow, this is what it's accumulated to. I remember in the 80s protesting some things. I remember Rodney King and how people protest. I remember when MOVE was bombed in Philadelphia, and all these things and these angry type of protests, but nothing was tied it all together. When the phrase Black Lives Matter came to be, it started tying all of these movements across the nation and now around the world to that here is a unified fight about injustice. I think that was powerful. And I think, you know, if we have this unifying phrase that people can catch on to and get behind, no matter what you're doing. So if we talk about the Renaissance, maybe we use legacy, you know, follow your legacies. And you have churches doing programs and schools doing programs and clubs and organizations doing programs, Shorefront doing programs. And we always use that phrase over and over again. It becomes the Renaissance. We're celebrating our own worth. And, you know, that I think that's one way of doing it that helps tie it together. Because I believe there are a lot of things going on, but sometimes we tend to act in silos and not together as a group. That Lonnie is doing something, we all should be doing that. You know, we're all part of that. You know, like the the E-Town picnic at James Park, that is a renaissance. The Jamaican Independence Day, that's a renaissance. This picnic coming up this Saturday, that's a renaissance. But if we use that as a collective term, we're all celebrating this. Even if you don't go to it, but you're mentioning it, talking about it, and being proud about it, you know, saying everything positive about it, that's the renaissance.
My brother. This has been a powerful show here. I love this.
For sure. We love it. And, Dino, thank you so much. Can you tell us and our listeners again where they can get more information about Shorefront?
Sure. You can visit our website at shorefrontlegacy.org, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just look up Shorefront. You'll find us there. That's where we put most of our announcements on the Facebook page. We do have a Twitter feed. Some things, our journal feeds out to our Twitter and our Facebook. So if you like us or friend us on Facebook, you'll get those feeds. You can also go to shorefrontjournal.wordpress.com and see our articles there, and you can follow that. And every time we post something, you'll get an automatic email notification that it's there. We're open always on Saturdays from 10 to 2. So come down and visit us and hang out, read a book, do some homework, look through some archives. You might discover something about yourself there.
We love it.
Amen, Brother Dino. Amen.
I love it. Love it.
Well, thank
you.
Want to
thank
so
you again
for
your time. We appreciate you and all you've done and all the dragging of this behind you with your dreads. For all these years, that visual straight in my head. Somebody needs to draw that. We need to get somebody to like make that painting, because I so see it. We so appreciate you and all of the work you're doing and have done. So,
Malika, thank you for doing these podcasts.
Thank you for doing these podcasts. Anytime you want to come back, please do.
Yeah. Bobby, Lonnie, thank you for all that you're doing in the community. You're keeping that energy alive. Brittany, this is the first time I think I'm meeting you. So I know you're doing great things, too. So
I'm trying.
Doing. You're engaged in this, so you're doing something.
Yeah, I love it.
Thank
and we all go up or down together. So, you know.
Yes.
We
all right. It's a family.
Thank you, Dino.
Thank you, Dino.
You have a great evening.
You too.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. That was...
That was
some great information.
Yes, right? Yes, it was awesome, absolutely awesome. So valuable.
Right.
And I love that people will be able to actually one day dig up this podcast and hear where he was, you know, really starting the work. And
after you get the seven-story museum that we're going to build for him, of course.
right, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Wow.
So, it wasn't a shameless plug. I asked you about it, Mr. Lonnie, again, this Saturday.
This Saturday, 12 to 8 o'clock, we're going to have blues, we're going to have rap, we're going to have everything. We're going to show people the real value and love that's in the Fifth Ward. Please come. It starts at 12 o'clock, and we'll make the city put us out, okay?
And where is it again?
Twiggs Park, which is Dodge and Simpson, Evanston, Illinois.
Dodge and Simpson, Evanston, Illinois, everybody listening. If you can make it out, don't meet me there. Beat me there. I love when people
I hear that. I hear that.
And, Bobby, it's always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Lonnie,
this
I love
is a great
it.
Show.
For sure.
Yeah,
Lonnie, you know yeah. I love it.
I love you.
Crack
Brit.
Me up. You can be, I love you. You can be as angry as you want anytime you want to. You weren't that angry today.
You.
It's fine.
Yeah. Well, I know I wasn't angry today. That's because my guy Dino was on. So, you know,
right.
I'm celebrating. You know,
you celebrate. That's what we
That's
do.
Right.
We celebrate. We have a good time.
That's right.
Malika, you know
yes,
it.
Yes, ma'am.
Hopefully,
yes.
I'll see you there on Saturday. So
I'll be there.
To all of our listeners, thank you all for listening again. Visit Shorefront. Visit the website and the Facebook page and like them on Facebook and give some of your time and money. I know I am.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great
tell
week.
Them, Brit.
Right? Put your money where your mouth is. Let's preserve our history and our information. So you know, our great, great, well, not mine necessarily because I don't have any, but that's beside the point. Our great, great, great grandkids can hear about it. All right? Everybody,
right.
Be safe. Have a great week. This is 30 Plus.
Yes, yes. Man. See you later.
Like a clown, facial expression looking silly, and he kept asking me, what kind of car you drive? I know you paid, I know y'all got buku with poles from all them songs that y'all done made. And I replied that I've been going through the same thing that he has. True, I got more fans than the average man, but not enough loot to last me. To the end of the week, I live by the beat like you live check to check. If you don't move your feet, then I don't eat, so we like neck to neck. Yes, we done come a long way like them slim ass cigarettes from Virginia. This ain't gonna stop, so we just gonna continue.
Record better audio anywhere with Motive digital microphones from Shure. Easy-to-use options like the MV88 plug directly into your phone or computer and include a free app. Create studio-quality sound for podcasts, music, and videos. Visit Shure.com to learn more.
Fall fashion's in full swing, and it's time to save big at Old Navy. Right now, get up to 50% off store-wide on your favorite dresses, pants, and tops. Plus, all jeans are on sale from $15 now at Old Navy. Valid 9/23 to 10/2, select styles only.